Chapter 3, Module 2, Genome Maintenance, Organelle Stress and Tissue Consequences, From Variant to Phenotype. A genetic variant causes disease only through a chain of biological consequences. The first question is whether it changes the amount, location, timing, or function of a gene product. The next is whether other proteins or pathways can compensate. The final clinical phenotype depends on the tissue in which the gene is important, the developmental stage, environmental exposure, and the reserve of the affected organ. Loss of function variants reduce useful activity. A single normal allele may provide enough product, producing recessive inheritance, or the amount may be insufficient, producing haploinsufficiency and a dominant phenotype. A dominant negative protein interferes with the normal product, often because both must assemble into a larger structure. Gain-of-function variants create excessive, constitutive, or novel activity and are commonly dominant. These mechanisms are more informative than the inheritance label alone because they suggest different therapeutic strategies. Mosaicism arises when a variant occurs after fertilization, leaving genetically distinct cell populations. Earlier events affect more tissues. Somatic mosaicism may produce segmental disease or cancer without being present throughout the body. Germline mosaicism can permit recurrence in siblings, even when a parental blood test is negative. In mitochondrial disease, heteroplasmy and tissue-specific segregation create threshold effects. Symptoms appear when the proportion of dysfunctional mitochondria exceeds what a tissue can tolerate. Variant interpretation combines population frequency, predicted molecular consequence, segregation, functional evidence, and fit with the phenotype. A variant of uncertain significance is not a diagnosis and should not be treated as pathogenic merely because it was found. Reclassification is possible as evidence accumulates. Testing can also reveal incidental or familial information, so consent and genetic counseling are part of safe investigation. Protein quality control. Protein production is intrinsically error-prone. Chaperones assist folding, while surveillance systems identify molecules that fail to achieve a stable conformation. Misfolded cytosolic proteins are often tagged with ubiquitin and degraded by proteasomes. Aggregates and damaged organelles can be enclosed within autophagosomes and delivered to lysosomes. These pathways prevent toxic accumulation and recycle amino acids and lipids. The endoplasmic reticulum monitors proteins entering secretory and membrane pathways. Accumulation of unfolded protein activates a coordinated response that temporarily reduces translation, increases chaperone capacity, and promotes degradation. If balance is restored, the cell survives. Persistent stress activates inflammatory and apoptotic pathways. This mechanism contributes to disorders involving secretory cells, metabolic overload, neurodegeneration, and some toxic injuries. Proteostasis declines with aging. Oxidative modifications accumulate, chaperone and degradation capacity may fall, and damaged proteins can seed further aggregation. Different proteins produce different patterns of injury according to which cells express them and how aggregates interact with membranes, synapses, or intracellular transport. The presence of an aggregate does not by itself prove it is the only toxic species. Smaller soluble intermediates may also disrupt function, mitochondria, oxidants, and metabolic adaptation. Mitochondria integrate energy production, calcium handling, biosynthesis, and cell death signaling. They continually divide, fuse, move, and undergo quality control. Damaged regions can be separated by fission and removed through mitophagy. Failure of this process allows poorly functioning mitochondria to generate less adenosine triphosphate and more reactive oxygen species. Reactive oxygen species are not exclusively harmful. At controlled levels, they participate in signaling and host defense. Injury occurs when production exceeds antioxidant and repair capacity. Sources include the respiratory chain, inflammatory cells, radiation, and metabolism of some chemicals. Superoxide dismutase, catalase, glutathione systems, and dietary or endogenous antioxidant molecules limit damage. Excess oxidants modify lipids, proteins, and nucleic acids, and can open mitochondrial permeability pathways that commit the cell to death. Cells adapt to limited oxygen, partly through hypoxia-responsive transcription. They increase glycolytic capacity, alter mitochondrial activity, promote angiogenic signaling, and influence red cell production through kidney-derived erythropoietin. These responses support survival, but cannot fully replace oxygen-dependent energy production in highly aerobic tissues. Chronic activation can also contribute to vascular remodeling or tumor adaptation. Cancer cells frequently reorganize metabolism to support growth rather than simply maximizing adenosine triphosphate. Increased glucose uptake and aerobic glycolysis provide intermediates for nucleotides, amino acids, and lipids. This metabolic flexibility is shaped by oncogenic signaling, nutrient availability, stromal interaction, and oxygen gradients. It is not evidence that oxygen is irrelevant to cancer. Tumors contain changing regions of perfusion, hypoxia, and metabolic cooperation. Membrane injury and intracellular calcium. Cell membranes preserve gradients and compartmentalize enzymes. Lipid peroxidation makes membranes leaky. Cytoskeletal damage weakens the plasma membrane. Reduced phospholipid synthesis and increased breakdown impair repair. Mitochondrial membrane failure collapses energy production, while lysosomal disruption releases hydrolases into an already acidified cell. Calcium is a powerful messenger because cytosolic concentration is normally kept far below extracellular and storage compartment concentrations. Injury permits calcium entry and release from intracellular stores. Elevated cytosolic calcium activates phospholipases that damage membranes, proteases that break down structural proteins, endonucleases that fragment nucleic acids, and enzymes that consume energy. Mitochondrial calcium loading worsens permeability and oxidant production. Calcium disturbance therefore links energy failure with structural destruction. The point of no return is not a single universal event visible at the bedside. It reflects interacting failures of mitochondria, membranes, ion control, and repair. Different cells cross that threshold at different times. This is why early reperfusion can produce dramatic recovery in some tissue, while neighboring regions remain irreversibly damaged. Patterns of regulated death. Apoptosis is driven by an organized caspase cascade and usually preserves membrane integrity until fragments are cleared. The intrinsic pathway balances pro-survival and pro-death members of the B-cell lymphoma 2 protein family. Severe deoxyribonucleic acid damage activates checkpoint proteins that pause the cell cycle, promote repair, or trigger apoptosis if repair fails. The extrinsic pathway begins when death receptors recruit intracellular activating complexes. Other regulated pathways blur the older division between apoptosis and accidental necrosis. Necroptosis produces membrane rupture through a kinase-controlled pathway when particular receptor signals cannot complete apoptosis. Pyroptosis follows inflammasome activation and pore formation, releasing inflammatory mediators and intracellular contents. Ferroptosis depends on iron-associated lipid peroxidation and failure of protective antioxidant systems. These distinctions matter in research and may create therapeutic targets, but tissue injury commonly contains several pathways at once. Dead cells influence their neighbors. Necrotic release activates innate recognition and recruits inflammation. Apoptotic cells expose signals that promote quiet phagocytic clearance and can support resolution. If clearance is overwhelmed or defective, apoptotic material may undergo secondary membrane breakdown. The tissue response therefore depends not only on how a cell dies, but also on how rapidly debris is removed. Tissue architecture, biomarkers, and recovery. Organ outcome depends on the extracellular scaffold, microcirculation, stem cell compartment, and spatial distribution of injury. A small lesion in the brainstem may be devastating because of location, while a larger injury in a redundant tissue may initially produce little dysfunction. Patchy injury can leave viable bridges that support recovery. Diffuse microvascular or toxic injury may impair an entire organ without one obvious focal lesion. Laboratory biomarkers sample this process indirectly. Release requires cellular injury and access to the circulation. Concentration then reflects the amount released, distribution volume, continuing injury, and clearance. Serial change can distinguish an evolving event from a stable chronic elevation. A highly tissue-associated marker identifies where injury likely occurred, but mechanism still requires history, examination, electrocardiography, imaging, microbiology, toxicology, or other contextual evidence. Recovery may involve restoration of function in reversibly injured cells, proliferation of surviving cells, activation of progenitors, remodeling of circuits, and scar formation. Apparent clinical improvement can precede complete structural repair, while normalization of a biomarker can occur despite persistent loss of reserve. Follow-up should therefore assess function, recurrence risk, and the cause of the original stress, rather than stopping when one measurement returns to normal. The practical sequence is to identify the stress, locate the vulnerable cellular process, judge reversibility, remove the cause, support energy and perfusion, and monitor the tissue response over time. Molecular detail becomes clinically useful when it clarifies why injury occurred, what can still be rescued, and what future stress the organ may no longer tolerate.